Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. We want to welcome you to today's show of the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes, and I am the host of the show. I'm so glad that you've decided to join us for today's episode. If this is your first time to come in, we've been doing this for about 2.5 years here, where we go out and get some top American collegiate coaches and have them come on the show and tell us a little bit about their program and then talk about college tennis and American tennis. I am also the CEO of the UR Tennis Network, and proud to say that we put on several shows during the course of the week that bring you tennis news, not just college tennis news, but tennis news in general. Monday at morning we have Parenting Aces with Lisa Stone, and she is in Atlanta, Georgia, and that show runs at 11 o'clock. Wednesday we double up. We have American Tennis with Chuck Creasy that comes on 11 o'clock before I come on the air, and then I come on the air after that with the American College Experience. On Saturday, we have Infinite Tennis with Bill Patton out in California, and sometimes he's followed up by Minorities in Tennis with Alex Chan, who's in Virginia. And so we have been trying to fill the airwaves with the tennis stories that you might not normally hear about on the tennis channel or your broadcast news or during special tennis events. And we've been very successful with that, with our programming hours that we've put into the iTunes podcast, with the Blog Talk Radio podcast section. And we've had over 100,000 listens with what we do here. And so we're proud of that. And we hope that the tennis fan will keep listening in. And today on the show, I have the fortunate chance to interview the University of Memphis's women's coach. And his name is Lee Taylor Walker. And Lee is doing an outstanding job out there at a program that's in a beautiful city. And he'll come on here in a little bit and tell us about it. And we're excited that he'll be here today. As always, want to try to cover a little bit of ITA news, that stuff that's going on out there. Many of the coaches just recently finished up with their ITA regional championships and the national indoor intercollegiate championship selections have been made, and there are a lot of selections out there. And I would go over each one of them, but it would just take too long. So I would encourage you to go to itatennis.com, and you'll be able to see a list of those. That event, we're so excited about that event because that incorporates those small college participants that won the Super Bowl a few weeks back. If you remember, we talked about that. And it is a wonderful event. It's an interdivisional event because of that, and we enjoy that just to see who the real champion is in American college tennis. Usually what happens, and we've noticed this in the past here, is that at these events the small college champion usually draws a Pac-12 champion or a participant there, and so there's very little chance that they'll actually get out of that first round, but it does happen every once in a while, and we're just excited that they include those small college participants out there. It's a singles and doubles tournament held at the USTA Billie Jean King National Tennis Center, and it's a wonderful event. For the other side of this is a lot of college coaches are finishing up their fall schedule, either this weekend or the next weekend, And it's a sad time because the college competition will go into hibernation for the winter months, and there won't be a whole lot of competitive information to talk about. On the plus side, the ITA Coaches Convention, which is held December 13th through the 16th out in Naples, Florida, will be convening. And we're excited about that because that's where those college coaches get together and talk about things, and really hope they'll talk about this new scoring system that they're trying to get implemented. We're not big fans of it. It seems to be lessening doubles in the college tennis world and setting very few teams up for tennis viewership. I'm not convinced that it should be an important aspect of college tennis to be on TV. It really loses its flavor, and it brings a great experience onto the college athletic scene. College tennis does, and we just hate to see it kind of die down and become not as important, because we all know that part of the problem in today's American tennis culture is that there isn't much doubles that's applied, and we know that back when American tennis was in its dominant form, that a lot of the players played singles and doubles, and we think that the strokes that you hit, the confidence you gain from the doubles game is very important, and so that's why I'm excited to see that the small colleges have not kind of jumped on the bandwagon here. And I'm a little concerned, I guess, about how much authority the ITA is going to give to the USTA, and, you know, the NCAA is going to recognize this as they travel through this, because I know that that's what the ITA was set up for, was to be the voice of the collegiate system and not have the USTA come in and kind of railroad over some of their ideas. And I hope that at that convention the coaches will get their chance to speak on the changes and voice their concerns about it. And, you know, we'll just have to pay attention and see what comes out of that convention. So I think I've got Coach Walker here on the line, so I'm going to bring him in just a second. Let me remind you, if you have a question today for Coach Walker or myself, you can call in at 714-583-6853. Again, that's 714-583-6853. Let me see if he's available.
Yes.
Hi, Coach Walker. Are you there?
Yes, sir. Hey, Jason. How are you? Can you hear me okay?
I'm doing very well today. It's good to hear from you. I'm glad you're on today. And I always start with an introduction here. I know who you are. I know how successful you're being. You've become out there at Memphis, but there are going to be some of my listeners that have no idea who you are. So will you just take a moment and let us know your history?
Sure. Well, I grew up just outside of Memphis, actually, in Jackson, Tennessee. Didn't come from too much of a tennis family, but my older brother, who's about 5 years older, got into tennis, and I followed him around, played a lot, grew up driving down to the Racquet Club of Memphis and various other tennis centers in Memphis to play, and that's kind of how I learned. My father was a college football quarterback, so we were around sports a lot, but tennis was quite a unique sport for being from Jackson, Tennessee, so my parents gave me a lot of opportunities. We would travel around all the different tournaments, we were kind of your random tennis family, though. But went down to Florida to a couple different academies in the summers, never on a full-time basis, but always would pop in and out there, and mainly just trained in Memphis growing up with Phil Chamberlain. And then went to Clemson University and played for Chuck Creasy for 1 year. Our team kind of had some, just a little bit of team drama. It wasn't really anything with Coach Creasy. I still get along great with him today, but it was just best for me to transfer back to University of Memphis. Ended up graduating there in 2004. became the assistant coach for the men's program shortly after that. And then kind of randomly, the women's tennis coach at university retired, and I was 25 years old assisting the men's program. And they asked if I'd like to take over. So it was, didn't really know what I was getting myself into at the time. But in May of 2007, I kind of started my new job as the head women's coach at Memphis. And it's been a lot of fun the last 6 years, just trying to build the program, trying to learn and grow as a coach myself. And, yeah, so here we are. We just came off our best season ever last year and still just trying to learn and having a great time with the team. And that's kind of where I am. It's kind of my tennis story in a nutshell.
Yeah, well, Lee, the University of Memphis team really not heard of before you got there. I mean, it was there, don't get me wrong, but, I mean, you have really put some time and effort into getting a national ranking there, drawing in some better recruits as you've traveled through this. I know it's got to be just a pat on the back for all the rankings that come your way.
Yeah, well, I tell every team, really, that the level of excitement for me really has been pretty consistent from year to year because each group I've had has really taken it to the next step and taken it up a little bit. And so even my first team that was, 12th in the conference and, ranked really low nationally, they moved our program from 12th in the conference to 9th in the conference. And, for them, that was a big thing. And it was nice to see them kind of overcome a lot of obstacles to do that. And it's really just been all relative since then. But I'm just as proud of the team 6 years ago. But certainly it is nice this past year when you kind of, I guess, get into that national spotlight a little bit and knock off some big wins. But it has definitely been a process, and it hasn't happened overnight. But I'm very proud of all the girls that have played and all the people that have helped. We've got a unique situation in Memphis in that our partnership is with the Racquet Club of Memphis. And we moved over there officially 3 years ago, and 10 clay courts, 6 hard courts, 10 indoor courts. They host a professional tournament every year. They host the 18 and under girls national championships every year. So that partnership's also helped us kind of, go to the next level and really be able to recruit anyone,
Sure. Well, let's talk about that University of Memphis first. How big is the school?
School's about 22,000, so it's not extremely large, but it's not small either. It's pretty much right in the middle of the city of Memphis, and it's got about 1,600-1,700 undergraduate students, and then about 5 to 6 graduate students.
How big is the city of Memphis on top of that?
Yeah, city and surrounding area is near 1 million. And then within the side of the city limits is around 600,000. So it's a large city. It's about the 17th largest city in the United States, and there's a lot going on here. And we certainly piggyback everything the city has to offer whenever we're recruiting, and just my own personal life, to be honest. My wife and I really love the city, and there's always a lot to do, and the university kind of sits right in the middle of all the action, so it's a lot of fun.
So if a regular student's coming to the University of Memphis, what degrees are they excited about, or what do they promote there at the University of Memphis?
Well, they got pretty much your wider range of degrees. One of the things that we try to do with our players is a little bit different in that, obviously University of Memphis is not going to offer a Harvard degree or Ivy League or even a Vanderbilt degree, but at the same time, we have 3 of our 7 current girls right now on a master's track where they've actually graduated, finished their undergraduate degree in 3 years, and will be halfway done with their master's program after 4 years. So that's really something that we personally push with each of our student athletes, just because we want them to challenge themselves as much as possible. For some, that means just getting their undergraduate degree in the normal time. 4 to 5 years is plenty for them, and that's challenging in itself. For others, they kind of have their mind made up already and they want to get their master's. So, really everything. We have an engineering program that's pretty good. We have a nursing school. Our exercise, sports science program, and sport management departments are pretty strong. Really, the strength of the University of Memphis is the internship program for the student athletes. Being in a large city, the city and the University of Memphis have a good relationship, and so the internship programs we're able to offer them is a pretty good highlight of the university.
Now, the athletic program there, University of Memphis, a couple of years ago, famous for a basketball team.
That's right.
Yeah, and I look at the and you play in Conference USA still?
We just moved, actually. You know, the shakeup's been crazy. We're in now what's called the American Athletic Conference, which was the Big East kind of, debacle. So this year we're in with Louisville and South Florida, Cincinnati, Central Florida. And so that's who we're all in with right now. The interesting thing about as far as the tennis goes, though, is we actually don't have a mandatory conference schedule, and some kind of don't like that. I actually fall on the side of liking it a lot, because it allows us to play kind of anyone and everyone, because we don't have any mandatory dates that we have to play within the conference. So we do play a conference championship at the end of every season with all the tennis schools in our conference. But throughout the year, my personal philosophy is to try to play the best from any conference possible. So we travel quite a bit. But referring to our basketball program...
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to. But as you referred to our basketball program, it definitely has been a historically a basketball school. They sell out most games, and it's a lot of your big programs obviously have great football programs, and that's kind of what everything centers around, and what drives a lot of the revenue and drives a lot of the TV and excitement around the college campus and city. And we're trying to rebuild our football program, but ours is definitely a basketball university. Everything kind of centers around that here in Memphis.
Now, have you finished your fall schedule, or do you have some more tournaments to play?
We have two more tournaments. We play. We host a little tournament this weekend. We've got a couple schools coming in. The biggest would be our rival, Tulsa, is a pretty consistent top 25 program. And then next weekend's one of our favorite tournaments we always end the fall with the last couple of years, and it's hosted by Dick Vitale down in Lakewood Ranch, Florida, at his Lakewood Ranch Country Club. And a lot of top programs will go down there. So we'll be heading down there next weekend and facing some pretty tough competition.
Now, how many tournaments did you compete in the fall?
We played a couple different ones, but each player on our team will end up playing about five. So we play the All-American National Championships, the Regional Championships. We actually put a few professional tournaments on our schedule. So we had a couple of girls go play some professional tournaments. So we're a little over halfway. We just finished hosting the Ohio Valley Regional Championships this past weekend at the Racquet Club, and it went well. We had a team make the final. So we're kind of winding down these last two weekends, and then we'll wrap up our fall season.
Now, how do you approach the fall season? Is that an evaluation process? Is this a time for some of the younger players to show what they can do? What do you look for?
Well, it's definitely a more developmental stage. I mean, I let our players dictate a little bit of their schedule for the fall from a performance standpoint. The way we kind of operate in Memphis is we'll have a meeting with the coaching staff and each individual player will pull up all the tournaments that are available for them to play and kind of show them to on a calendar and kind of just walk through it with them. I don't make the players play certain tournaments they don't want to play or vice versa. It's kind of depends on their goals. So, like, on our team, for example, we have kind of three different pockets, three different groups. We have girls that are really focused on wanting to be professionals one day. So, you know, they'll be in that meeting and they'll circle a lot of the pro tournaments. And then you have other girls that are just dead set on wanting to get their college ranking up high. They want to try to win a regional or national championship before they graduate. So, you know, they'll circle a couple of those, you know, highly rated college tournaments. And then you've got a group that wants to do a little bit of both. So that's the beginning of the fall. In those meetings, we'll kind of set the tone and set the schedule for itself. And then we'll kind of go with that and set up some training blocks for each of them based off where they want to peak. But it's definitely more on the developmental side. It's pretty individual. We get a lot of one-on-one time in the fall and try to get our core values of the program, I guess, established with the freshmen and get kind of in the loop, make sure the chemistry is good. And some years that just goes easier than others. I mean, some years it's got to be forced a little bit to get the team chemistry going. Other years it flows pretty easy. This fall for us, it's been a real smooth transition. We had two freshmen come in. We graduated three seniors last year, so I thought maybe it was going to be tough for things to flow well, just not having that leadership return. But actually, a lot of the upperclassmen this year have just done a great job of reaching out to the freshmen and kind of setting the tone and teaching the core values to everyone. So we've had a nice fall, but, you know, our philosophy is pretty player-oriented in the fall.
Yeah, now you've added, and I noticed that some of the college coaches are doing this more, adding these professional events. What are the advantages to this? Is it a recruiting advantage? Is it a player advantage? What is it?
Well, I think you got coaches doing it from two different motivations. You know, one motivation obviously would be recruiting. You know, like, hey, you got players playing professional tennis. They're thinking about playing full-time pro. They're not ready. The coach knows that. Their parents know that. Their coaches at home know that. But maybe the kid's just a little stubborn and, you know, about to turn down this opportunity because they want to play pro tennis. So it's a recruiting way to say, hey, well, you can play pro tennis. Come here and do that while you're at college. And I think the motivation for some coaches is to just put them on the schedule for the sake of putting them on the schedule so that they can tell recruits that, hey, we've got pro tournaments on our schedule. I think the way I look at it is the NCAA allows college tennis teams to take their players to seven individual tournaments a year, whether that's a adult tournament, college tournament, professional tournament. Within the rules, the university can take them to any of those, but only seven a year because they get seven individual tournament dates. So the way I see it is that if there's a very ambitious junior player who really wants to try to play professional, I have seven dates a year I can pay for them to go play professional tournaments. If they want to play three to five, let's say, on their own in the summer, then you're talking about a four-year period where a kid could play anywhere between, you know, 40 and 60 professional tournaments. And if you're graduating at age 21, 22, having played 40 to 60, you're probably going to have a pretty good idea if this should be something you should do for a living or not. Yeah. Where I've seen the mistake happen a lot is we have a lot of talented players in college. We don't give them opportunities to see if they can make it. They graduate. They don't have a ranking. Now they've got to go fund themselves to go play professional tennis. Let's say they play 6 months. They've run out of money. They don't have too many good results, and all of a sudden they're questioning themselves, and all of a sudden, before you know it, they're they're moving on to something else. So my whole thing with our program is if that's something you want to do, I want to make sure that when you graduate that you feel like you've had every opportunity to do that so that the transition is very smooth. Because let's face it, it's an expensive thing to do, and it's the level out there is very strong. So I want to help them. And if that's what they want, it's not for everybody, and I certainly don't do that with every player on our team. But I think that's going to be the trend of some of your top nationally ranked Division I programs here in the next couple of years is the top half of their lineup are pretty much going to be a very, very talented group. And I think you're already seeing that a lot. You've seen that a lot on the guys' side already. So
when you get finished with the fall and the kids go home or take their Christmas break and you start to get ready for the spring, do you bring your kids in early?
We do, yeah, we do. We'll bring them in probably about 10 days early and just get a nice little training block without school. Two years ago, we went down and played the USTA National Junior Team and trained there in Boca. And that was really good for us. It was good to play the top juniors in the country. It was good to kind of have a good relationship with them down there. And this past year, we just came and trained in Memphis for a couple days early. I definitely want the girls to be able to go home and enjoy their family, so that's very important that they don't come back too early, that they get away from it all and get home. But we'll bring them in usually about 10 days before school starts.
Now, as you travel into your spring schedule, is it getting harder? You know, I mean, you're getting better through the course of your time there in Memphis. But as you're able to schedule more and more teams, is it becoming difficult to get those matches, or are you getting the matches that you'd like?
Yeah, we are. I mean, the way I typically schedule is I usually print out the rankings and just start at the top and go down. And so for a while there, we were in that window of being a good team but not with a good ranking. So found it really hard to schedule during that time because you're the team that really nobody wants to play and nobody can afford to play because there's nothing to gain and there's everything to lose. And so definitely gotten easier this past year and a half because our ranking has, you know, gone up high enough to where we're actually not going to be a bad loss for someone. And so we travel a lot, that's for sure. Like I said, we play pretty much everybody in every conference. So we do travel a lot, but we'll space that out well enough as we can with some home matches. So you know, this year, for example, I think we have three or four nationally ranked teams coming to play us in Memphis, and that certainly wouldn't have happened 2 years ago. So that's nice for our home fans and nice for the Racquet Club here and to be able to come watch us play some top opponents.
Right.
But it's gone well so far.
So what are a few of the matches that you look forward to in the spring?
Well, we always have we have some that we do every year with Vanderbilt and Ole Miss. Those are always battles. They're just down the road for us. Vanderbilt's pretty much had our number every year, and we feel like we're getting closer and closer. Tulsa, we always have battles with, and those are tough. We're hosting Pepperdine and Louisville this year, and should be some quality matches at home. And then one team I'm really looking forward to play, if we get the opportunity, would be in the second round of National Indoors. We'll be at North Carolina. North Carolina won National Indoors last year. We've got to get through a top 40 team in Virginia Commonwealth first round, and I don't want to overlook them at all. But if we do get through them, we'll be playing at North Carolina versus North Carolina. And they were a strong team last year, and I think they're a little stronger this year. So that's probably one that's circled for all of us. It's kind of been something we've wanted to do here at Memphis every year and just try to play the best teams possible. So I'm looking forward to that one a lot.
And, you know, I'm curious about the conference now. Will you guys get together at the end of the season there and play a conference tournament, or how will you determine a conference champion?
Yeah, so our conference champion is determined by, it's just the tournament at the end of the year. South Florida will actually host our conference championship this year, and the seedings are set based off the national ranking from the week before. So most of us play each other anyways, and so you'll have some head-to-head results that will assist in those seeds a little bit, but primarily the seeding is based off the national ranking and kind of the body of work during the season. And then the winner of the conference tournament will get the automatic NCAAs, and then you're usually boils down to whoever's about top 40, top 43-ish, who will get an at-large bid.
And so I've seen this in different conferences, you know, adding, taking away teams, so on and so forth. I mean, were you upset to leave Conference USA or excited to enter into this because of the different teams? How did you feel about all that?
Well, from a tennis standpoint, with Tulsa's going to be coming over with us next year, and SMU came with us, and a couple of the schools in Tulane as well. With our transition, we're moving so many of the teams that were in Conference USA to this new American Conference that it's not much of a change. So from a tennis standpoint, I think it's going to strengthen us a little. But we were already at the sixth strongest conference in the country. So, we're excited about it. I mean, from a tennis standpoint, I'm pretty excited about it. I think from an overall conference athletic department standpoint, is that you're always looking to be in the strongest, best conference that you can. I think it's clear that there are five conferences, you know, Pac-12, Big Ten, Big 12, ACC, SEC, that are kind of leading the way in a lot of the things that they do from an athletic department standpoint. From a tennis standpoint, because we don't have the mandatory conference schedule, we're allowed to overcome a lot of that by being able to play enough ranked schools. We have a good support system here at Memphis to where our budget and travel things don't differ much from the top five conferences. So from a tennis coach standpoint, myself, it was not very relevant. I think the bigger picture for the athletic department is obviously that you'd want to make moves and get closer and closer into those big five conferences if you're a University of Memphis or Central Florida or Houston or SMU. So that's kind of where we're sitting right now.
Yeah. Well, Coach, I sent you a list of questions before we started today. And,
yes.
You know, one of the questions that that we've got is diversity. As we travel through this, you know, we here on this show in particular, hear both sides of it. There are too many internationals in college tennis. There aren't enough internationals in college tennis, or you know, it's not a big question there. So as you travel through this and your experience there at the University of Memphis, how is the role of diversity played in your approach to your team?
Yeah, you know, I think it is a tough concept going on right now. It's a tough issue. I certainly, this past year, our best team ever, we ended up with four Americans and four internationals. And, you know, it's definitely a challenge because the global sport and because the level of competition. And so, you know, as a player and a student myself growing up, like I had so many coaches, so many diverse coaches. My first coach was Argentinian. My next one was Spanish. Next one was German. And I had Americans kind of in and out as well. And so I've been able to get that from as a player to be able to get coached from those different areas was very helpful to me. It was very developmental in just my view of the world, my view of everything, my development of core values. And I think it's also been a teaching role for me from a coaching standpoint to be able to coach the different cultures and different backgrounds from people. I don't know where the direction is heading. You know, how I handle it here in Memphis is I try to keep half and half. That's what I would desire. But I also pursue the best players I possibly can. I think one of the negatives for, let's say, University of Memphis as far as attracting more Americans and Americans is for the goal of our tennis program is to win a national championship. You know, we want to be the best team we possibly can. And so there's a certain level that has to have to start with, and then there's also a certain amount of development that has to take place. But the starting block is going to be harder for me with Americans just in general because, one, we have no tradition, like you mentioned at the beginning of the show. We don't have a lot of historical national prominence. So the natural bend for an American is not going to be to look at University of Memphis. I would hope, and I appreciate you having me on the show, and I would hope over time, if we can get more established, that would happen. But that's just natural that, hey, UCLA, USC, Georgia, Florida, like if I'm recruiting the same player and you throw in University of Memphis with those four names, it's very obvious to an American which the oddball is in that group. To an international, that's not obvious. And so I think that's where a lot of coaches, including myself, it's like when you go down that road so many times to where you're pursuing a prospective student athlete and you're recruiting them and you get in front of them and everything's going well and you lose out, let's say, over and over and over again to maybe somebody that could have come to Memphis and could have taken our program to 25 in the country, to 10 in the country, but instead they want to go to the number 10 school in the country and play number 7 and 8, then you start to get into, like, well, how do I want to best spend my time and energy and resources to build the program? And so that doesn't happen every time, but that's what we've found sometimes. It gets a little discouraging. And so, you know, a part of my job is not only to build a good program now, but a lot of my job now is getting the word out that, hey, we're actually going to be a consistent contender. You can have a great college experience here off the court, but you can also reach your maximum potential on the court. But it's tough, Jason. I'll just be honest, it's tough. It's really tough. So.
I know, Lee, and you know, I don't know if you're good friends with Joey Scrivano, but Joey had to go through the same thing there at Baylor. And nobody knew who Baylor was for a long time, and then just all of a sudden, you know, he starts to do a better job of recruiting. He starts to get a better tennis athlete and then rises up and gets a national ranking and then keeps going. But you two guys have a lot to share and a lot in common here. And I can completely identify with what you're saying on the American side of things. It is a hard sell when you put yourself up against those four schools that you mentioned to attract a good American player. There's no doubt in my mind that you could give a great experience once you got them there, but just to have them commit is tough.
Yes, exactly.
And, you know, I think that one of your coaches, I had Coach Creasy on last week to actually talk about his new job there at the Citadel. And, you know, Coach Creasy is in favor of kind of limiting the international player, and you know, I can understand from Coach Creasy's perspective on how that would benefit him.
Sure.
But I have to ask you, would you be in favor of limiting an international player? Not that it's ever going to happen because of the discriminatory rules that come into effect with it, but to even things out, I mean, would you attract more American players because of a rule like that?
Yeah, no, I think that I think that's a good thing because I think it would be a necessary thing in order for it to happen. I mean, there's going to have to be a for any of it to ever change, there will have to be something mandated. So I'm not necessarily pro or against it. I guess I would be pro something being mandated. So then the field would be evened a little bit. And so,
I mean, because it seems like that sometimes in these situations, and it tends to be the smaller D1s that we get, just for lack of better terms, a bunch of used car salesmen in there that put eight international players in there and say, well, I can't recruit any Americans, but
right.
Me coming from a community college experience, know that there are Americans out there. You got to develop
them. No, you're right. You're right. And that's got to be and that's what I was talking about earlier, is the way you kind of look at our team is that, you want people to fill roles. So if I have eight people on my team, it's probably not healthy for me to be recruiting, I don't need all eight of them to think they're pro anyways. So you definitely want that developmental, there's people there that need to be on that developmental path. Everybody's going to be on one, but there's no reason why it can't be done. I agree with you.
Yeah. Well, callers, if you've got a question for Coach Walker today, 714-583-6853, 714-583-6853. Lee, as you travel through this and you see all these college tennis teams, as you recruit some of these national events, what's the status of minorities in tennis? Are they putting in the effort to contribute to American tennis?
Well, I think it's hard. I think one, the level is getting higher. So I would say the level is it's deeper, stronger globally. So the expectations are getting higher, not because people are necessarily forcing it, but it's the standards high. And I think it's getting better, the college tennis. I don't know, are you referring to college tennis? Are we helping diversity? Are we helping players maybe get better and improve and all this stuff? Is that what you're saying?
It's on both sides. Our feeling here is that these minority populations really have the most to give to tennis because they're not really represented or haven't been represented. And if given the right opportunity, I believe that the athletes could contribute to a tennis team. And on the second hand, on the other side of that is once they get there to these college programs, are they coachable? Are they worthy of the scholarships? Can they improve? That sort of thing.
Right. Well, I think the opportunities are there. I think that what I see from a lot of Americans, and it would be very expected, I'm not saying I didn't think any differently growing up or whatever, is they're very narrow focused when it comes to the opportunities that I want when I graduate from high school. I think if they can open it up a little bit, my encouragement to anybody in high school graduating is like to really open your options, open your mind to all the opportunities, all the schools out there would be the starting block. The way that they get narrowed down, I don't see it being the primary factors that should be focused on. The way someone should be narrowing down their college choice should be people, vision, opportunity. So the coaching staff and the players, the vision of the program, the opportunities they're going to have there to grow and develop and lead, whatever. But too many times it's narrowed down based off how's their football program, what conference are they in, how's the party scene at that school, how's whatever. And so I think there's got to be a lot of parent education, coach education and ultimately junior player education, that, like, what are the primary factors of what you're seeking in your college experience? Because there's too many that are very jaded and looking at the wrong things. I call them secondary factors. You can have all the secondary factors there go right. If you don't get along well and you're not on the same page with the coach and the team, and you don't have any reason, really depth, to why you are at the school you're at, and you don't see any opportunities in front of you, you're going to have a miserable time. And the opposite could be true. Well, you know, none of the secondary factors could be there, and all of those could be there, and you're going to have the time of your life. So that's what I would say as far as the opportunities, is it just needs to be a little bit more education on what I'm looking for. Then the second question I would say is, no, I don't think we're doing a good job. I don't think I think my summary of college tennis coaches would be that you have the most talented pool of players, not just in America, but in the world. You have the most talented pool of players in the world with the least experienced coaches in the world. Or maybe not the, like, I don't know. I think we've got some great coaches out there, and I think it's heading in an okay direction. But you said it earlier, I think there's too many coaches just kind of riding it out and not really trying to maximize some of these players' games. It's too cush. And I think it's changing. The reason I say I think it's changing is because I was fortunate to be a part of this summer team. This past summer was the USTA Collegiate Professional Team, and I was one of the assistant coaches for Dustin Taylor, who's in charge of the USTA Collegiate program that's recently just gotten kind of renovated and reinitiated, and it's starting to happen. I learned a ton from Dustin Taylor this summer, and also learned a ton from Wes Knott, who's the assistant coach at USC, because he was the other coach for the national team. But there was a hunger there kind of from all coaches to learn, and then there was also a desire to help these kids improve, get better, and grow. And that is not the majority. And so I don't think it's good, but I think it's getting better, because I think there's people that are seeking to do it. I know Dustin Taylor, for example, is reaching out to a lot of the college coaches, trying to educate them, whether that's on opportunities that their players on their team could have, or whether that's on how you can help your team with their footwork or whatever. So I think it's got to get better. I think that there's a talented group of players. There's a lot of talented Americans going to college tennis. I think it's a great pathway because it can, especially for the emotional development, the mental development. But I think the actual tennis development has got to get, it's got to get a lot more intentional, and it's got to get better. It can't be same old drills, same old story. There's got to be a vision for players when they show up to a college team. It's got to be clear. If you can't write down your developmental coaching philosophy on a piece of paper, I would say you don't have one. It needs to be clear, and that's just what I think is missing from a lot of your college coaches area. It's too much managing. It's too much managing, recruiting, go perform for the university, go win a conference championship for the university, make me look good, help my resume, help our university. And it's not enough about, am I actually making this kid better? Am I actually developing them if they want to play after college? And even if they don't, am I giving my life away to them so that they can be better in the future, whatever they do? And there's not enough of that. And, sorry to rant about that, but that's kind of my
thoughts. No, that's all right. That's what this is for. Listen, we picked up a caller here. Let me see if I can bring them in and see what kind of question they've got. Hi, caller. Are you there? Do you have a question today?
Yes, I do.
Amrit, I can tell from the first, from the first words.
Unbelievable.
Hey, man, how's it going?
Great, Amrit. How are you, buddy?
Oh, I'm sitting on my couch. Jason, how are you?
This is Tiger Legend, Jason. Mr. Tiger Legend on the phone.
Yeah, I saw Jason put it up that he was interviewing you today, so I said, oh, let me see what this guy has to talk about now.
Yeah, well, but, you got a good question here today? Put you on the spot.
Yeah, first off, I just wanted to kind of talk about what Lee mentioned earlier about his schedule playing some futures every fall season now. And he kind of hit the nail on the head, basically, by saying that, you know, because so many players now in college, when they come out, what he said is exactly true. Like, they don't know if they want to play or not. They give it 6 months. They don't have the money because they don't have the world ranking. I mean, I was kind of in a similar situation when I finished my career at Memphis. Lee was my coach. When I first got to Memphis, I was recruited by other schools, but I ended up going there because I felt he could make my game better. And I never thought that I would be playing professional tennis when I got to Memphis. So in a way, like, he was actually there to help me get better and to develop me, where, like you said, a lot of the other college coaches, they're out there just to win and get better and do that and not actually worry about a player's growth. And they're more like managers. And there's nothing wrong with that, too. But I wish more colleges would do that, like playing professional tournaments, because that really helps players, not on the guys and the girls side, who want to go play pro right after college. Because, I mean, most of them, I think about 80, 85% of these players are confused. Now I can look at it because I've done the whole process and I see younger people coming out now, and it's pretty widespread. Like, most of the guys don't have a clue as to how to go about it, and they waste a year of their resources and time trying to figure out the exact way.
Mm-hmm.
But my question to Lee was, when you talk about the whole thing with American and foreign, like cutting down the foreign scholarships, now, I don't know about the women's side, and that's why I'm asking this question. Would that be good in a way to cut down foreign scholarships? Because are there enough American girls to spread out over, let's say, the top 30 ranked teams in the country?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I don't think it would not be good for the overall level of play in college tennis.
Yeah.
And it would not be good from that standpoint. It would be fair from a standpoint of now there's an even playing field for now. It's like, oh, you're cutting me. I can't go get a certain amount of internationals. Well, that's okay because so-and-so can't do that either. And it's a fair kind of ball game.
Yeah. But then aren't you just taking away from the better players? I mean, if a Spanish comes in and she's better than an American, is it fair to her that she can't get the opportunity because, well, the American didn't – I mean, I'm not saying they didn't work that hard, but they're just not good enough. But I don't know if, in a way, if they do that, would that affect the scoring system with the TV marketing and the level of play? I don't know on the women's side, because I know that would affect the guys' side a lot.
That's a good point. I mean, It's definitely a good point. I think it would lower the standard for sure.
I think now they've done that in the JUCOs where they're lesser scholarships for international players, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know.
That's right.
Yeah,
no, that's
and
right.
Has that affected the level of junior college tennis?
Well, what's happened there is you've opened the door up for more American players, and it really depends upon the coach to go out and identify a better tennis player, a better athlete. And, you know, I know that the level has dropped off a little bit because you don't have as many good coaches, just like Lee was saying earlier. We had a bunch of recruiters there that were, you know, putting their teams out of all four or five internationals and whatnot. So they really were exploited in that realm. But I know, and you know, you spoke of it, like TJC, their level hasn't really dropped off.
Yeah.
Because they have good coaches and good recruiters.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, that's true, too. And I guess exactly what Lee said, it just comes down to the coaches, because I'm sorry to say that, but most coaches are out there just to get their name better, but there's no actual I mean, there are only a very few handful of coaches in the country who are actually tennis coaches who can get their players better. And I had that situation when I went to Memphis. The head coach, Paul Goble, and Lee was my assistant for 1 year, and then he decided to ditch me and take the women's job. I couldn't believe that. But in a way, these guys helped me see a path of tennis that I never thought I would be on. So, and there are very few guys like that, and I wish there were more. There are good coaches out there, but all the good coaches end up at the country clubs with their positions because it's tougher than to break into college, and then you have the whole pay system with college tennis, which where the assistants don't get paid enough. So most of the good coaches want to go into coaching at a country club where they can make two or three times the amount of money. So, I mean, a lot of work can be done to get college tennis better. I mean, the new scoring initiative, I think that's insane to cut down doubles time because most of the fans leave after doubles anyways. They don't want to watch 3 hours of singles unless it's the NCAA tournament or like a big rivalry match.
I think Amber brings up some good points, and I think the bottom line is it's hard to identify and risk, and those two things go together.
Yeah.
If you would have told me, Lee, do you want to recruit and coach Amrit after his senior year of high school, I would have said no. And I said, well, why? I was like, well, I can identify that he's got some potential here, and he looks like he's pretty strong and whatever, but the level of risk is going to be too high. Why? Because there's nothing to back it up, really? Mm-hmm. Well, what's the difference? 2 years later, he finishes at Tyler Junior College, same talent level, same identification, like, okay, hey, this guy's got some potential, this guy looks pretty, but what was the difference? Well, the difference is he's got some on-paper results to show for it, so the level of risk comes down, and I think that's what you're dealing with when you talk about, like, hey, you find Amrit, you find Courtney Collins, it's like, it's both diamond in the rough, but those diamonds in the rough come with not just athletic ability, but also a standard of expectation that they already have built in their own head from the results that they've had.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we were able to have a lot of success, honestly, for a couple of years with some junior college transfers was that 2 year period to be able to get the confidence that they needed. The athletic ability was there, but then the confidence, and then you're able to develop that player and take them to another level. And I think that's the hard part with Americans right now. It's not hard finding the athletes. It's finding the athlete that has proven enough results to where they're worth the risk. And it's just so easy to find that internationally, unfortunately, because there's so many.
Yep.
And it's very objective, and you can pull it up online. And I know that girl, I know that result. And so it's a tough thing, but I think it can be done, and I think the coaching can get better, and it will get better. But it's got to get better from all angles. I mean, we're involved a lot with the Racquet Club of Memphis here, and, like, I need the Racquet Club of Memphis coaches to – do well. I need that quick start program to do well. I need them to teach fundamentals. I don't need that club to be just running a business. I don't need them to just trying to power out numbers every day, all day. I need them to actually teach good fundamentals to that 5-year-old girl who comes over there to play. Whether that's for my own benefit later or not, it's just better for American tennis all around. So, I don't know. It's just going to depend how many communities get that. How many communities
feel
that? So,
yeah. Well, I appreciate it. Amrit, do you have anything else you want to talk about? You want to give us a Go Memphis Tigers, a cheer?
I mean, I'm just happy it's basketball season. Like Lee said, we're a basketball school.
If
there are any parents out here listening and you have kids that are interested in college tennis, definitely look at the University of Memphis because you got a great coaching staff and that school is really in the rise up now. So, it's a fun city, good education, and guys who care about you as a person, so definitely look at Memphis.
Well, thanks for coming on, Amrit, and we appreciate you listening.
Yep, Jason, take care.
You know, Lee, I've got to ask you, and I'm not going to keep you much longer. We've gone to the hour, but I want to ask you about that new scoring system. You know, do you have a
sure.
preference on that? I mean, how do you feel about it?
The new one that will be in play January and February, or the new one that will be in play with the USTA college matches? Or both?
Well, do you want to take each one separately, or can you bundle them
sure.
together?
Well,
or
I think the position the ITA was put in was a very difficult position. I'll first start with that I didn't realize when it first came out, you know. And so, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but apparently this was an athletic director's combined with the NCAA decision as far as the USTA and the USTA as far as the initial one, the
yeah.
single spurs with three
yep.
super tiebreakers at the end if it were to go to three all. So in retaliation to that, the ITA said, hey, it's looking like the NCAA, along with the athletic directors, along with a little bit of assistance from the USTA, is going to move in the direction of change. It's coming. Therefore, we as the ITA need to be proactive in conserving the parts of the game that we want to conserve, but also try to meet some of the needs that they're wanting. And so, from that standpoint, I don't mind the ITA changes for the January and February just because of the position I feel like they've been put in. If I wouldn't have known the position they've been put in, then I think I would be very against it. I don't like changing the tradition of the game. I don't know what Coach Creasy said, but I'd probably be on whatever side he said. I think he's upheld a lot of the tradition of the game. When I went there, he's big on physical fitness. He doesn't want to shorten it. He takes pride in that area, and I agree with him. But if the state of college tennis is under, not investigation, but if it's being looked at by athletic directors, we've got to say, one, hey, that's a good thing that they actually take the time to look at it. We want them to continue to look at it, but if they are looking at it, we want to meet some of what their requests are. Because we want them at the end involved. You know, I want my athletic director talking about college tennis. And so if there's a group of athletic directors that think shortening it some way is going to get them to talk about it more and help, then do it. Is it really going to help? I don't know, Jason. Is it really going to shorten it that much? I mean, we're experimenting some with it with our tournament this weekend, and we'll be able to see. I think if they take good data this year and get some good objective feedback, then I think that would tell us more by next summer. But I'm kind of torn. I'm kind of torn on it.
Well, you know, as a tennis coach with your athletes, that we're just excited to play tennis, you know, and
that's right.
and we don't like to see our game mess with. But we can understand some of this, and what happens here is, are you cutting too much? You know, and
right.
and that's what's going to have to be decided in the long run. I am not in any belief whatsoever that the ITA had no idea that this was coming. And this is my own personal opinion. For years,
okay.
The ITA has accepted dues from all realms of college tennis to be responsible for situations like this, and just to all of a sudden spring up and say we had no idea just bewilders me on certain ends. But that, like I said, Lee, that's my own personal opinion about this, and we keep a watch on this stuff. You know, and here comes, and the other side of that is here comes the USTA, which all of a sudden now is, why are they in college tennis? I mean, they really don't have any business in college tennis. Can you name another governing body of a sport that's involved? You know, the NCAA football, you don't have peewee football coming in and saying, hey, well, you got to do this, or AAU coming in and saying to the NCAA basketball, listen, you need to do this.
Right.
So I'm a little scared in that regard, and how much power does the USTA have in college tennis? You know,
right.
but like I said, Lee, that's a personal opinion here. I like you, and I mean, I side with Creasy on a lot of this, and just so you know, he's involved in a group that thinks that each division, and he's trying to build steam with this, should be able to govern themselves. You know, Division One tennis should be able to tell everybody in Division One what scoring system they want to use and how they want to use it, and not have anybody else tell them.
Right.
And that comes from the coaches.
Exactly. No, I think that's it's always going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I really don't know. We experimented a little bit. We had a doubles match last 17 minutes a couple of weeks ago. I mean, it was like 6-1, that new format, and we were all laughing about it. It was pretty funny. I think you can do some things to, you know, like I don't mind cutting out the warm-up stuff, to be honest. That can save 20 minutes right there. So there's a lot of things we can do. And the other thing I would say, too, is to be able to contextualize it a little bit to certain matches. Is it really a fan problem? You know, how many of the – what percentage of the matches is it a problem with fans? And so those are all things that are – it's tough. Who knows where it's going? You know, all the TV stuff and media stuff, it's changing very quickly. So,
I mean, they're not cutting the football field down to 80 yards to shorten the game.
Yeah.
You know, and we're not lowering the basketball goal to make it more exciting. And for some reason or the other, we've decided that college tennis needs to be reckoned with. I mean, baseball, you know, you can go on and on about some of these other sports. And you know, I understand that from my end, as we investigate this, that, you know, we're trying to make this TV accessible. But how many college programs are going to actually have TV viewership for a college tennis match?
Right. Well, I agree. And I think it's all, you know, a lot of this, It's going to be tough. You know, your big conferences are getting their, you know, TV networks. They're having to fill time. They're getting their own TV studios on campus, and so they're going to they're honestly just filming the tennis matches to fill their allotted amount of time that they're going to have to on their network.
That's right.
Whether people watch it or not, it's going to be one thing. I don't know. If it were me. And it were, as far as the TV concept goes, TV concept should follow. We already have professional tennis on TV, so let's follow that model a little bit, which is the individual stuff. Let's highlight some of the best college players in college. Well, when do you do that? Well, you do that at the All-American National Championships, your regional championships, and your national indoor championships. If we're really wanting to get on TV, we don't have to worry about the time limit. Take whatever model the ATP and WTA uses for the finals of their championship or tournaments and take that to national indoors, and you already have that match set. You can sell it to a network. But when you start getting into dual matches on TV and the time needs to be shorter, like there's no model to follow there, so it's going to be really gray and nobody's really going to want to make an investment or risk at that. Start with what would be very easy to do, which was your All-Americans, your fall tournaments. And so that's what I'd say. Let's if we're really pro TV and we got to get on TV, start with your individual championships for college tennis players, which are probably going to be your ones that most likely will end up in the professional ranks anyways, and kind of build it that way. But that's another talk another day, I guess.
Yeah. Well, Lee, at the end of the show, I always allow my coaches to give an email address. If somebody has a question about something you've said today or possibly wants to send you a recruit, do you want to go ahead and do that?
Sure. Sure. It's ltwalker@memphis.edu.
Well, I had a great time today interviewing you, Lee, and hopefully this gets a little more notice out there about the University of Memphis. You've been doing a great job there, and I'm truly inspired by your model. I think just keep up the hard work, and you'll get where you want to be.
Jason, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate what you're doing, and I hope to stay in touch with you, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, Lee. Take care.
Okay. See you, Jason.
All right. Bye-bye. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Coach Lee Taylor Walker. Lee is doing an outstanding job out there at the University of Memphis. Of course, you know that if you've been associated with the college tennis world. Here's a guy that took, as he said, a team that was 12 out of 12 and now has a national ranking with his program and continues to grow that, attracting better international players, better American players, and he's attracting attention to himself. He spent some time with the USTA collegiate team this summer, and he's drawing attention from all parts of the United States about his coaching ability and what he's doing there. So we're really glad that he took some time out of his schedule to come on and visit with us today. And please go check him out there at the University of Memphis and see what he's doing over there. And we look forward to seeing you back here next week, Wednesday at 1 o'clock. We'll be interviewing somebody else. Thanks so much. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
I love it.